views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the views or endorsement of any entity. Nothing being said on this podcast should be considered as investment advice.
All right, GM, hello everyone. We are a few minutes late. We have plenty of excuses. I would say, first and foremost, we are running and operating from, well, I'm at my house. I'm assuming, Sam, you're at your house. I'm not sure. Amanda's at the office. We did this today because, it was my fault. It was my fault because I had my kids this morning. They were going to a Halloween kind of like gathering for their school where they sang a song, and I had to dress up as Bowser this morning. I was in full Bowser garb just a couple hours ago, and we moved over to a virtual setup so we could make this work, because I wasn't going to sit in LA traffic for an hour. That's a long story, but that's where we are. So hello from my house. How you guys doing?
Who's Bowser?
Are you kidding me?
Mario Brothers.
Did you never play Mario
Brothers? I mean, Mario, no, Kart? I'm not a gamer. I don't game things. You know me.
The F word already. We're only.
Oh, I'm so sorry. The show. It's okay. You guys don't even know who I am, so it's fine. It's fine.
Oh, we do know who you are. You are Amanda, who is Proof's culture and community VIP. The one.
There
and
you
only.
Go. I like that. I'll take it.
Although Forrest is also our heart and soul of the company as well. We got to say on the community side, love the Forrest. Yes. He's just not on the show. Yes. Sam is Proof's director of research. And Sam is here with us as well. Good to see you, Sam.
What's going on? To clarify, I'm actually at the Hilton Garden Inn in Denver. I'm not in. I'm not at home. You know, it's pretty. it's what you'd expect. You know, from the lobby of the Hilton.
That we're drinking it anyway. Hilton.
Exactly.
Why are you with the Hilton right now?
Because my kids
have another wedding.
My wife had a doctor's appointment. I mean, it's just like 3 hours from our house, but we drove in last night, and she's with the kids now, but I have to drive her to a doctor's appointment this afternoon. So we just came here for a day or two.
We're getting all personal up in this show, telling our life stories on the show. I love it. This is great.
So, audience, man, let's go.
We are. This is a transparent, build in public type of podcast here. So if you're watching YouTube, make sure to subscribe. Say hello in the live chat. Amanda's watching the live chat. She loves live chat. Say hello to Amanda. And if you're on Twitter, drop us a little reply. We'd love to read that as well. All right. Today's show, we've got a lot of stuff to cover. I don't have a teleprompter anymore, so I don't know what that is we're actually covering, because it stopped scrolling for me, as is the nature of the live show. But I know we have a market update from Sam. That I do know. And I know we have Thank You X on the show as well, which is going to be a lot of fun. Sam, let's start with the market update.
Yeah, so let's quickly talk about what's happened in the market over the past week. Starting off just kind of on the price front, you know, we had a little rally a few weeks ago, and it's kind of held, I'd say, in ETH terms. I think to really appreciate this market, though, you got to look at the US dollar chart. And in US dollar terms, the index and the market has really rallied quite sharply because ETH has gone up. And people always say ETH up, NFTs down, but that hasn't really happened when it comes to NFTs over this rally. So people have made a fair bit of money in US dollar terms. The other thing that's happening is as the prices of PFPs have gone up, our block continues to kind of trend lower. And that's really just like a lack of volume, you know, and your Chromey Squiggle floor price has gone to 8.5. From 10 ETH. So we're just seeing a little bit of a trend lower. In terms of the other thing that I'd say, you know, is happening right now is that even though ETH is rallying, what's really rallying has been Bitcoin. And I, you know, the ETH to Bitcoin ratio is currently at basically a 2.5 year low. So that is, you know, even though the crypto complex is rallying, ETH is rallying, certainly it's not rallying as much as other indices are. In terms of where the big sales have been, we had a Fidenza sale for 40.5 ETH. Now, one thing I'd say about that Fidenza sale is it was the, you know, it was the first sale of a Fidenza this entire month. Ever since Fidenza's launch, there has not been a single month where there were less than two Fidenza sales. So really just kind of speaks to the lack of volume we're seeing in some of the grails that we have out there. There was a Ringer sale to Bob Lucas for 24 WEATH, a bunch of Chromie Squiggle sales, a Gazer for 12.5. Now, if we're looking at the one of ones, I think the biggest one of one this week to talk about is Rip Cash. This piece called Power Source was actually four ordinals that were sold for 5 Bitcoin. Now, to kind of align on what that means, 5 Bitcoin is about $169,000, 95 Ethereum. So every single one of these ordinals was sold for over 20 ETH, which is just a massive sale. I mean, Rip Cash, he was really kind of one of the people that put the idea of these surveillance cameras as NFTs on the map, does everything on chain, which seems like a really good fit for ordinals, but a really strong sale there from Rip Cash. I said that was the highlight. There also was an autoglyph sale for 150 ETH, which always nice to see an autoglyph move, but 150 ETH is kind of the low end of where they've been trading recently. And then I also highlighted two moonbirds. When I look at kind of grails that sold there, we had two moonbirds. One was a 27.5 ETH sale for a glitch moonbird. There was also a gold moon bird which sold for 12 ETH, so that is awesome. And then specifically on a couple projects, specifically I think the one that is the most in focus right now is the Velocity Pass, which is kind of the collaboration by Red Bull, Bybit, and a bunch of great generative artists. But Snowfro put out his 3/piece, and that the floor got up to 0.1 ETH. We're now at about 0.6 ETH, but there were a couple grails that sold for 5 ETH. One sold for 4.69. So that is very cool to see. And then Art on Internet also announced that the fourth artist for this pass is going to be Jack Butcher. And I think, I spent a lot of time looking at the different passes because we're so involved in that with Proof and like what is making some work, what is making some not. But I think that this Velocity Pass by Red Bull Racing and Bybit and all these entities has really just been a huge success story. So very cool to see that. And then the last thing I just wanted to touch on is these pieces that are being auctioned off through Proof. It launched yesterday, and it's really off to a great start. This one here, Instability by Jesse Woolston, already has a 7.77 ETH bid on it. The bids have been from Deez, from Sam Spratt, from Woodmere, Club Capital. These pieces by Luke Shannon have already hit their reserve, and we're seeing bids as high as 0.8 ETH for those four. And then lastly, this collection called Receive Transmission by Aaron Penne, 0.23 ETH, 0.23 ETH floor price. This was something that, people who had the allowless spots were able to get for 0.1 ETH. So this has already been a pretty big win for everybody who's gotten involved. So love to see that. Obviously huge news as well from Thank You X, who's doing a solo exhibition with Sotheby's. We're going to have him on the show in pretty soon, actually, given we started late. So Thank You X is going to be on the show. That's going to be awesome. And that is pretty much all from me for now. The other thing I'll say is that we our daily show that we did publicly for 200 episodes on YouTube, we now do only within the Discord for people who hold Proof assets. So that is something that we have a Discord, just devoted to it. Tons of dialogue in there, and we're just dropping market recap shows, kind of what's ahead, analysis, stats, charts, all that stuff on Mondays and Wednesdays. And all you have to own a Moonbird or a Mythic or a Oddity to get in access to that. And that's all from me.
Yeah, love it. So much, I feel like there's just good vibes. Like I feel like we're, we got some good Moonbird sales. We got some great art drops. It just is, it's been great. Oh, I think I lost you all. Oh, you're back. Okay. One thing I wanted to show you real quick though, check this out. Did you guys see this?
Hugo had already noticed it in the background. Amazing.
Guy with the most likes. This is the actual physical piece
that
he dropped with us. So I picked up the NFT, convinced him to sell me the actual physical. And I did not pay him in meat, but I probably should have. but this is just so beautiful. I'm going to get this framed and have this up at my house. So super, super excited. Thank you, guys. We love you. You're awesome.
Amazing. I want to say, that's amazing. I'm so jealous. I wanted to say, I wanted to just also kind of highlight what you were saying, Sam, about your channel. Channel's been doing really, really well. I will say that like for a while there, for the last 2 days or last couple of days, it had been all about the velocity pass, all about the three slashes. Is that what you're calling it? I like that. I was just going to go like, but that's better. Three slashes by Snowfro. And it was really kind of cool to see everyone mint and participate and give each other the information so that they can get involved. And you know, same thing with even the Aaron Penne. I got to mint one this morning. It just sold out. And, you know, I think everyone's just super happy to just be able to collect art. So to shout out to everybody in the Discord, just kind of vibing on great art.
Do you know that Maggie?
I was just going to say, I think like also, you know, there are members there that got ahead of that milk mint that happened last week, which minted for 0.05 ETH and has a 0.3 ETH now. You know, and just different art blocks that dropped this week from the Regen project. Like it just feels like a place where people are coming now to bring their ideas on art, to talk about art. So I've really enjoyed that channel. So yeah, thanks to everybody who's stopping by and who's part of that.
I was going to say, our very own Maggie, who throws all of our wonderful events, gassed it up today, as she said on a text thread, and was able to sneak in and win number 99 of our drop that sold out of 100. So congrats to Maggie.
Look at us.
For getting involved there. Love it.
I love it. Yeah.
And her wall, right. Her wall is called Bones, too. Bones 726. Who knew that? But yeah,
that's her nickname. All right, Sam, real quick, you know, I know we were going to talk about, you know, just this rally in crypto and how it's been affecting the market and NFT specifically. What's your take on this? And do you believe that this rally is something that's going to be sustained? And, you know, is it something where you think this feeds into NFTs? I know that hasn't been the case in the past based on previous data. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the past it's been very ambiguous. People love to say that if ETH goes up, then NFTs can't do well, and that's just not historically true. You know, if you actually go back to 2021, you know, the biggest crypto rally or the biggest NFT rally when Punks really, you know, it was summer of 2021 that Punks really caught attention, that Bored Ape Yacht Club kind of took off. You know, and that period from early 2021 to kind of towards November 2021 was it the biggest rally for NFTs and also the biggest rally, one of the bigger rallies we've had in ETH as well. So they can both go up together when a lot of attention is coming to the ecosystems. You know, I think when you look at kind of a bit more stable periods where there's not just massive changes happening, during those periods, you see maybe a little bit more negative correlation. And what I mean by that is ETH goes up and the price of NFTs in ETH goes down. But this idea that ETH going up has to be bad for NFTs just is not historically true. And I don't think it's been true recently. I think recently, you know, we've had, you know, a lot of floor prices have really rallied quite nicely together with this ETH rally. So I don't know. It's kind of an interesting relationship to keep track of. It's one where I think that the Twitter sphere is going to give you a lot of bad information just because it's an, you know, when a floor price goes down and ETH goes up, it's kind of an easy out for it. But I am intrigued by the rally. I feel like at least from, I think you kind of have three different things. On the Bitcoin side, you have both the very specific catalyst, like the halving, but also, of course, the ETF, which is getting a ton of attention. I posted a chart earlier kind of looking at when the gold ETF was approved and how that correlated with the price in gold. And it, you know, it kind of was the beginning of what ended up being a multi-year rally. So I think that's a huge thing. And then I also think, you know, on the one hand, you have potential for Fed loosening, which is certainly not what the stock market is telling us. So I don't really think that's driving prices. But then just kind of concerns about U.S. debt, concerns about, you know, just uncertainty over where the U.S. economy is heading from an interest rate perspective. And I think there is a little bit of a sentiment like in some of these worlds where things are unpredictable and, you know, where there's a lot of macro uncertainty, something with limited supply like Bitcoin could be a good place to store wealth. So I think there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
How have you been playing it, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's spot on. I you know, there's certainly this kind of like flight to quality that I feel like we're seeing, where it's like if there's uncertainty around the world, like what are the assets that people want to get into and hold over the long term? Cryptocurrency in general has been now through enough cycles that I think people are starting to say like, hey, this is not just some type of thing that's just going to go away. And it wasn't just like some type of, you know, craze that lasted for a few years and is now gone. Especially with, if the ETF win, hopefully the ETF, knock on wood, gets approved, that is the first time, you know, consumers will have access to, and larger funds will have access to, purchase something that I feel that they can get comfortable with. I think a lot of people are scared off by the negative side of crypto. I mean, we're reading every day about, you know, the FTX trial that's going on right now. And people think, you know, at least in my immediate circle, colleagues, even, you know, high net worth individuals, they say, I don't want to touch that because I think I'm going into an exchange and, you know, the next day it could be out of business or turn out to be a scam, right? Obviously, FTX was a massive entity. And so this is a way for, you know, you can trust Fidelity or a BlackRock or any other of the bigs out there that get involved in these ETFs and say, hey, I'm going to allocate a small portion of my overall net worth to cryptocurrency, right? And funds will be forced to do that. They'll say, I need to own 1% to 2% of this as part of a fully diversified fund. So to me, I think that once that starts happening, people that are holding crypto feel a little bit, you know, their pockets feel a little bit more padded. They go back into NFTs. They say, I'm willing to take a little bit more risk here. We see NFTs jump up again. And then this is another cycle where people say, hey, NFTs were not that thing we thought they were. They're not a scam. They're actually a real durable collectible asset that people will hold on to as an art collectible. And I think if that happens again, we're in a good place, you know, and we'll return and we'll flush out the bad actors in this space as we always have. And the people that are just building day over day, week over week will be appreciated. And I hope Proof's one of those entities. You know, that's what we're marching towards. So I'm pretty bullish. I'm pretty excited. I don't know how you all feel, but it feels like this is trending in the right direction.
It's Amanda, definitely making me feel bullish. It's definitely making me feel bullish. I want to, I'm glad that CT just posted up this screenshot chart that really made me really happy. I love when Sam posts a chart that just fits my narrative, that makes me feel bullish. You know what I mean? Like, this is how the gold ETF impacted gold prices. Like, all you got to do is just like superimpose that Bitcoin chart on top. And that means we're hitting like a million, right? Was Balaji right? Is this what's going to happen? I think so. You never know what could happen. So I'm just a permanent bull. And I think that it's only, all it's going to take is like a matter of time. I think there's nothing to be worried about in terms, I think, of the future of ETH or of Bitcoin. I think whether or not those are necessarily vehicles for what we're going to be doing, like for digital art, I don't know. I still don't know if ETH and digital art will always be paired, especially when you're starting to see more and more people wanting to just make things as easy as possible and scam-free as possible. You know, who knows? There could just be like a MoMA L2 that ends up being the place, right? Like, who knows, right? But I do think that in general, you know, ETH as a store of value, Bitcoin as a store of value is pretty much of a no-brainer, I think.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, well, I think like we're in an environment, I think you're in an environment where people are kind of going towards this. I think one of the things that's attractive about Bitcoin is the limited supply. It's that you can't print more of it. It's that scarcity factor. I think, you know, gold is doing well as well. So a lot of the things that have those characteristics. The problem with NFTs as an asset class is that it can be unlimited supply. And I think we saw that. It's like once the attention started coming here, more and more and more got created, and then it kind of just diluted some of that. So, but I think if you look at the NFTs where there's provenance, where there's limited supply, where there's already reputation, you know, I would be like Chromie Squiggle will start to rally again. I think, like, you know, if you look at like CryptoPunk, some, you know, Autoglyph, some of the stuff that where I think that scarcity factor is kind of established in what they are, I think this, you know, hopefully attention starts to flow back into them. So certainly, you know, something that I'm keeping my eyes on for sure.
Awesome. Amanda, audience questions, anybody out there asking any questions or any feedback from the chat?
Well, you two do not know that our stream is actually frozen right now. So we are going to just like, let's just jump into Snowfroze Velocity series. And I know that Mao and CT are working their ass off to get us to it.
All right, let's jump in.
I mean, it's going to be
So we are still live though, right?
We're recording. We're recording.
Okay, we're recording.
I think we're live,
there might be some kind of
All
right. So Amanda, why don't you kick us off with Snowflow's Velocity series? Give us a little overview there.
Sure. So Snowflow's Velocity series is one of the collabs for the Art on the Internet, Red Bull Racing, and Bybit collaboration. So they have a pass called the Velocity Pass. Snowflow's series three slashes. I think the fourth or sixth on this pass, or the third, the fourth and final one, the fourth and final one will be Jack Butcher, as Sam said earlier. So this was a mint that happened that got everyone super excited. I think there's something to be said, like sort of like iconic iconography, I guess, of the F1 racing, right? If you are a fan of F1, you'll recognize the arrows and the slashes. I think one of the bigger part of it that is actually really cool too. Not only does it have, you know, the squiggle algorithm, has a lot of those same like cool hotkeys and sort of hidden traits and stuff, but it is also, it comes with a physical, it comes with a hat that will be embroidered on it. And there's like this really cool technology that Snowflow developed to make sure that, you know, the area is like, you know, super efficient. They don't have to like switch out like three of them. So put a proof of concept here on how you can actually get generative art onto physicals in a super easy, fast way. And I think that is like Snowflow's kind of end goal here and main goal is to try to bring generative art to as many, you know, like places as possible, any like physicals as possible, right? So I think it's really kind of cool on that sort of like algorithm level, on that physical level. And people seem to be really, really excited about it. They had a couple of different sort of like windows to mint. And I think that the public Dutch auction, which happened before the series holders were able to claim it, that one ended at 0.34. So that's pretty good. And now the floor is what, 0.65 or so? 0.575. So value. I don't know. Pretty good turnout for this mint. It's still a snow. It's 2,000 pieces. And a lot of people are reeling with it. People love the party mode. People love the hyper. And people are just super excited for it. What do you guys think about the art? Maybe the concept? What do you guys think?
Two things jump out to me. Yeah, I was going to say two things that jump out for me here. One is I just love how Snowflow kind of brings, he brings in little connections to the Chromie Squiggle, to everything he does. So like they're hypers here. And it, you know, I think he's kind of carrying over, you know, some of the branding that he's created that people love so much. You know, bringing in, there's brandings. I mean, there's hyper in Hearts and Crafts. There's hyper in this project. There's hyper in the collaboration he did with G Money, you know, with the 90cc drop he did. So I like how he kind of maintains that consistency and he's done that here. That's one thing I find really cool. The second thing I'm always interested in is how do we get kind of these win-win-win situations where Velocity Pass wins, where collectors win, and where the artists win. And I feel like they've done that really, really well here. You know, they gave all the pass holders one for free. It now has a floor price of 0.6 ETH. They found, you know, they did a Dutch auction so that they could earn revenue along with it. You know, and I just think like when you see those win-win-wins, like that's always really encouraging. And they did it last time too. They had the Per Christian Stovlin drop where, you know, they did the Dutch auction. It went for 0.3 ETH. That was only to pass holders on the floor, shot up to 1.5 ETH. Now it's at like 0.95 ETH. So I think we've seen a lot of success out of Velocity Pass at what they're trying to do. And, you know, I'm very curious to see what Jack Butcher, kind of names this year and super creative. And it's, I'm excited to see what that iteration will look like as well.
Awesome. Yep. I don't know if we're having a little bit of connectivity issues, so I don't know if you all can hear me perfectly, but I'll jump in next. You know, I think that Snowfro in general is making a big hard push into physicals, you know, NFTs as represented and as they can be reproduced in the physical world, which I think is a fantastic thing. And it just gives more, you know, real life tangibility to some of these collectibles, which I think is awesome. I would say that this particular design style is not for me. That's just me as a personal collector. I think that, you know, it's interesting because I'm kind of torn on how I feel about the Chromie Squiggle attributes, like being carried over into other collections. Like I don't know that, when I think about the Chromie Squiggle, I think about it just being such an iconic first that, I mean, obviously he's the artist, so he can do whatever he wants, but I just don't know. Does that feel dilutive to anyone in any way? Or do you think that, do you see what I'm saying at all? Does that make sense? Or is it just because it's Snowfro and it's the, these are his, obviously he can take them any which way he wants. So I'm just wondering how you all feel about that.
I actually feel I can't believe that you're saying that because I feel like, oh wait, Sam.
Go ahead, Amanda.
Let me talk. Kevin, it's funny that you say that because I actually think that, like, in the same vein of CC0, it goes right back to the squiggle, right? Like the being able to use all those traits and getting people, more and more people, to understand all of those different traits in all these different kind of collections now makes it easier to understand some of the, like, kind of intricacies of the squiggle, right? Like, so I actually think it's a good thing, and I think it's better diluting the actual squiggles. Yeah, but that culture aspect to it, like, I think is actually kind of cool, and it makes me even more sort of proud of squiggle when you're seeing people get excited about the hearts or those sweaters, or like I have the OG, like, and you should probably get the OG if you love other stuff. So I think it's cool.
Yeah, I'd say something similar. I think like when I think of the squiggle, I definitely think of Snowfro, but I also think of this is the first art blocks. This is one of the first projects that really took generative art, put it on chain, created 10,000 using a random algorithm. Like, and I feel like that is kind of, it's that full package that makes it so unique. So when I see like the hyper trait being used here, kind of, it reminds me a bit of alien, zombie, ape being used in other projects, you know, but to me that doesn't take away from the fact that for CryptoPunks, like, alien CryptoPunks are still kind of the ultimate. And I think when you get alien being used to kind of make, to be the best captains, or aliens to be the best of another project, to me, it just adds to the lore of what makes an alien CryptoPunk so awesome, or what makes a zombie CryptoPunk so awesome. So I kind of see it kind of similar. I kind of see it all building on itself a little bit here, to build out his brand. I own a Chromie Squiggle. I don't feel that much temptation to go buy one of these NFTs. Like, I love my Chromie Squiggle. But I don't feel like getting one of these would be like, oh, I own this now, I don't have to get a Chromie Squiggle. Like, that thought is really not kind of, at least where I personally land, but every collector obviously approaches things differently. You know, and the other thing is, has started to release a fair bit of art. I mean, Hearts and Crafts has had thousands and thousands and thousands of mints. You know, he did the Bright Moments piece. So he is starting to put more and more art out there. And I, you know, and they all seem to have enough differences that I don't think it takes away, at least for me as a collector, from what the Chromie Squiggle is.
Yeah, that's fair. These are all great points, and you're getting me to come around. I think that one of the things that, you know, this reminds me of actually is when Dimitri, you know, after Ringers did the Eternal Pump series, which, you know, you can draw some parallels there in terms of design aesthetic, and but they are different, but kind of somewhat connected, you know, in the way that they look and feel. You know, the artists have, like, there's no doubt, like, that there was, who did it? Was it Die? So who did it that said that Snowfro owns the rainbow or something like that, or the owns the, do you guys remember what I'm talking about? There was a drop here like a week or so ago. It was like a funny
gay boy. The
fact that he just, is that who it was? Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
But like to that point, I mean, it was a humorous kind of like NFT in a drop, but he's known for this, right? So there is a point there that I kind of expect some type of a spectrum of color coming from Snowfro. Not to say he couldn't break out of that, but that is his jam, or it seems to be, at least in the drops he's done to date. Well, I will for say sure. One last thing about this drop is I do love that Snowfro continues to be kind of a thought leader on where we're taking, you know, these the NFTs and how they can apply to the real world. That to me, I think, is just so special. And I do love, you know, I got the Diamond Slikes physical. I like having a physical component to a lot of my NFTs. And I think that's a trend that we're going to see continue here over the next year or so.
Yeah, that's an embroidered crew neck that I have because I'm a big fan of just putting the art places, right? Like, I think prints are great, but I think that finding a way to like wear your flex, I think is even cooler. So, Profro on leading on that one.
Awesome. All right. Well, I think that wraps up this section. I know we have things that hopefully, with a little bit of luck, is waiting here to join us for a conversation. We'll see if Thank You X, aka Ryan, is available for a chat with Sam.
Thank You X, what is up, man? How are you doing?
Good. Yeah, I'm happy to be here with you guys.
Congratulations, first of all, on this exhibition with Sotheby's. Do you want to? Can you just give a quick overview of what is this? What is it? I went to the Sotheby's page and there's a couple pieces of your work, but not a ton of detail about it. So why don't you just give the overview of what this this exhibition is with Sotheby's?
Yeah, so this is a full gallery exhibition. It's not an auction. So traditionally, Sotheby's is known as an auction house, and they opened a gallery in Beverly Hills in 2021. So they've been doing, you know, primary and secondary kind of gallery shows and exhibits there. This is 13 of my paintings. I did a full digital piece and then a couple hybrid where I put the screen inside the painting. So it's a full across the board, everything that I've been working on, digital, physical, everything all in one, and everything's for sale.
And is it work that did you make it specifically for this show, or is this a bunch of work that you've kind of built over time and meant to be a bit of an anthology about your work?
It's completely made for this show. So I actually created the work, and I would say I had 75% of it done. We spoke to limitations with different galleries and who we wanted to work with. Ultimately, Sotheby's was like going to be the best partner for us, so we partnered with them. And I love Michael over there, and he's always done good by me. So, So I basically had the work done for a couple months now, and I'm just excited that the announcement is out. So
that's awesome. And when you say people can buy the work, is there like a price point on it? So there's not going to be an auction. It's just priced work that individuals can buy.
That's correct. It's nothing. It's traditional, like gallery style. So it's fixed prices and first come, first serve kind of thing.
How did the show come to be? Like, what's the backdrop of how you decided like this was the best format for kind of your next stage of presenting your art? And I guess the side by side question with that is, what's the overall theme of the art? How does it differ from work you've done in the past? And I guess what's a bit of the message you're trying to put out with this work?
Yeah, so with this show, it's called Inertia. It's really all about like studying the movements. So if you think about if you're looking at the ocean from above, you see currents going every different way while the clouds are going a different way and I'm in a plane going the other way. It's just kind of like flattening that, you know, and making it my paintings, as you can hopefully see behind me. Also, like, you know, with NFTs and digital work, all the stuff that I've done mostly is in motion. And so I wanted to try to also have that feeling with a still canvas. I've always been fascinated with like the idea of motion. There's a great quote from the Rick Rubin book that was just out no two gusts of wind are the same. And that just like stuck with me because it was like, I was listening to the audio while I was actually making this stuff already. And so I felt like kind of like serendipitous with that, like hearing that quote, and it just stood out to me so much. And so, yeah, that's basically it. And then how it came about was last year I was talking to my team and I was like, hey, I think it's time to do a solo show. I think I'm ready to do like a proper like hometown solo show. And I did a showcase in Korea this year as well. Like those were my two kind of like what I wanted to do. I was like, I really want to break into Korea and do something during Freeze. And then I want to have like a full solo exhibition this year. And so we just started, I was like, I had already made a couple of the works and I was showing people, on my team, like the works, and, everyone was excited about it. And I was like, I'm going to build off, there's like two main pieces that I started. And I was like, I'm building off these two. And then, I just kind of went from there. And like I said, we started talking to different galleries and, touring different places and just having conversations with people about timing and what would work. And, Sotheby's, again, like their space in LA is just so beautiful. And, you know, Michael and the team have always been good with me. So that's who I went with.
One of the things I find so interesting about you as an artist is you had a very established career as a traditional artist. I mean, sort of traditional in the sense that you were kind of doing, you know, outdoor art, and then, you know, Snapchat found your work and suddenly you got discovered by galleries. And then you also have been a huge kind of hit and successful artist within the NFT space. But even within the NFT space, you're always still giving honor to the physical and to kind of the traditional space. And where would you say you are right now in terms of being a traditional artist in the physical world versus someone who really builds art for the NFT space? Like, what's that balance for you right now?
Well, actually, I want to say something. So like, a lot of people think that I had this like crazy success in the traditional art world before, but really it was like, I was successful because I was like able to live off my art, but I wasn't in like top level galleries. I was not working with Sotheby's or any of these Christie's. Like at the time, I would host my own art shows. And it was, you know, basically like a lot of the big galleries that I wanted to work with would turn me down. And so that kind of forced me to go back to like my DIY, like punk rock background, where it's like, all right, I'll just do this myself. And so I had to learn how to get pretty scrappy with that. And that's, I think, how, I was kind of able to, you know, transition into the NFT space and like understand it. Cause I was like, oh, this is like this underground world where everyone's kind of doing their own thing. And, you're not dependent on like a gallery or a gatekeeper to like give you the go ahead. You know, there's still people that like can open doors for you, but it's not like the end all be all. Right. So, I did have success and I was able to live off my art, and, I was doing well. But again, I didn't have that, like I wasn't like accepted by like the top level people where like now I'm like working with Sotheby's and that's like because of Web3, you know? And so, it's kind of like one of those things where you have to like make enough noise to where they have to, then they start paying attention, you know? But as of now, I would say I look at myself as an artist. And so like, yes, I'm traditional in the sense that I do physicals, but my background is like graphic design, art direction. I was creating like tour visuals and tours for, like stage setups for touring bands and stuff like that. So that kind of like mashing that together was how I was like, oh, okay, that's, instead of doing that for other people, I'll try to like, you know, art direct my own stuff and like conceptualize my own stuff. So I had never really married the two before. It was kind of like work for hire stuff and then like painting stuff. And so now I'm doing it all together. So I look at myself as an artist, and I love the physical. I love the digital. And with the stuff that I do, I try to like push the boundaries back and forth of, you know, like I put a screen inside my painting and now is that a digital painting or is it a, you know, physical piece? Like, start the conversation.
Yeah, no, it's such a cool concept, the idea of the screens, it kind of in the physical art, and it's something that, you know, you've done so well. I think you said earlier that Sotheby's has done well by you, and you and I have talked about this before, how you really have a great relationship with Sotheby's. You did a huge auction with, you know, with Hans Zimmer, with Phillips, I believe, earlier as well. I hear a lot of kind of debate within the community over if the community gets a lot from the auction houses because so much of the NFT buying ends up being from the same buyers that would buy someone's work on Super Rare or elsewhere. What's your thought on that? What has been your experience with the auction houses as an agent for you?
So for me, I look at it as a positive. I'm able to get new people looking at my work that wouldn't look at it before. Without the auction houses, there wouldn't be a lot of traditional people coming to the space. So like, and that's not to say that they always win the auctions, but like, and you know, auction houses can't tell me like the person's name of who's buying or bidding on something unless that person wants me to or wants them to, but they can tell me this is a traditional person bidding on this piece, or right now the current person who has the highest bid is, you know, a very big traditional collector and doesn't own any NFTs yet. And so for me, that's like a bullish sign where they're taking it and they believe in it so that they're vouching for it so much where they're willing to risk it by bringing in their like big clients to talk about like Web3 stuff. Now, obviously like the crypto people come in and win a lot of times because they want to like, you know, make a statement. And I love that. But the conversation happens. And so like maybe someone loses my auction, but then maybe they win another person's auction. And then now they have a wallet and now they're looking at Super Rare. Now they're looking at these other things and diving more into it. So I think it's a cool entry point. For me, I look at it as it's the same message, just spoken in a different language. So if for like one of my pieces, a traditional collector can maybe understand it more than if it was just something on a screen or just a JPEG, like, you know, like a CryptoPunk or something. They might not understand that. And if they look at it and they're like, okay, I'm buying a painting. Painting has a screen in it. That screen is a portal to this other world that like, I don't really know yet, but I'm safe enough to know that I'm at least getting this painting. And then I get this digital thing with it. And so that's at least been my experience. And I like it. I mean, I like that. I like what Christie's is doing. I like what Sotheby's is doing. I think it's very interesting. And we saw each other at the Christie's Art and Tech Summit. And so like, I think that we need people like that to push things forward and like what the MoMA is doing. And with the Rafik stuff, like they're put everyone, like all these big institutions believing in the space, only putting artists. That's every criticism that they get is very, you know, fair. And I think, you know, welcome. So.
Yeah. No, we hear kind of the lines about how, or you see the headlines about NFTs dying and whatnot. And then you go to that Christie's event with the CEO and with every senior person from Christie's just about digital art. And you can see like in that sphere, this remains an incredibly important kind of part of what they're doing and what they're building their business around. One thing I wanted to ask you about, because I feel like Asia is a hot topic right now. And I know that for you, like you've really gone all in on Korea as a location. What's been your relationship as an artist with Korea, with collectors in Asia? Is it Korea specific or is it kind of to the whole region? How's that been going for you?
So in 2015, I had a collector that lived in LA. I got introduced to him through like a different collector and he wanted a piece of mine. And he was like, hey, I have this, I have like a place in Hong Kong and I want you to come out because I think you would love Hong Kong. And so like, come out to Hong Kong and let's, you know, just spend a week there, meet with galleries. And so I actually went there in 2015 to Hong Kong and I fell in love with it. And so I just kind of like that specific trip opened my eyes to like everything outside of what I already knew. With Korea specifically, it was like last year, I have a big collector from Korea who bought like one of my physical, you know, with the screen inside of it. And I met this other guy through someone else and they both happened to know each other. And I got on a Zoom with them one day and they were just like, we got to do something together. And I was like, okay, like, and they're like, come to Korea. And I'm like thinking like, okay, like, are you inviting me? Are you flying me? You know, like, because I don't often just go on like a business development trip to another country to like hopefully have something work out on my own dime. I want it to be like a reason. I have like a kid at home. So I don't really like to leave my wife and kid for just to go, you know? So, but I talked to my wife and we're like, yeah, I think this could be interesting. Korea is one of those places that the culture of art there is like so big and it's not like, it's like deep, deep, deep rooted. It's like these have been around for like 40 plus years. Passed down to generations and it's real. So I wanted to go see what it was about. So I went out there in January and met with a bunch of galleries and just talking to Web3 people, traditional people, and came back home. And I was just like, I was like, man, like the energy in Korea when I went was like a lot better around Web3 than it was like in America at the time. And I feel like because they, a lot of time, like Korea's really on crypto, so they have like a deep understanding, and then they have this deep of art, but they weren't early on NFTs, and they kind of like stood on the sidelines and what happened. And we're like, not yet, not yet. Like, we're not going all in yet. And now they're starting to go all in. And so that's why I was like seeing it and like being like, oh my God, like, and I tweeted something when I went there and I was like, the energy here is like very strong about Web3. Everyone should be paying attention to what's happening here. And then I got to go back in March for like, they had this like pretty small conference. It was like NFT Korea. And there's like maybe like a couple hundred people, like 500 people there. But it was like very well done. Like the best conference that I've seen. Huge screens, like super cheap gallery, did the curation for it. It was very cool. And so I went back then. And then I was just keeping, you know, my relationships up with the people. And then I decided to like this company called R2 for an official freeze event during Korea Blockchain Week. And that's when I went out there for that in September. And so I've been three times this year, which is crazy. And I hopefully will go back next year. And I just feel I love it. And I would love to explore more of Asia as well.
Yeah, I find in my experience, I find at least what we're seeing, I feel like there's just a ton of money, at least coming into like the profile picture space from China. And there's some in Korea, but I feel like that, like the collectors there seem a bit more interested in the stuff that's established a bit more. But I don't know if that's just kind of what I'm seeing. Would you say that that's true for you? Like, and I think in your case, being an established artist at this point with the backing of Sotheby's, having done something with Hans Zimmer, do you think that that has helped you? Or do you think that the energy is just for just kind of everything Web3?
I doubt those things help me from like someone who's coming into the space, because they look at it and it's like, oh, okay, this legit thing that they know. Whereas like, if you're native to the space, that might not be as important to you. But I will say, like, I went to this dinner there, and if you like put a camera in this dinner, holy shit, like, I can't believe they got these people in one room. Like, I was looking around and it was like, wow, like these are big people. And it was like, you know, the like one of the head people of like that founded the company that's with BT or that runs BTS, and like another person from Blackpink, and then it was like Frank D. Gods and like Zagabond and like all these like big, it was like just big names, and like I don't really know those guys, but like they were there, and like it was like Bobby Hundreds and just like all these big culture people around what we're doing, and then like just outside of that of people that are like paying attention. So it was interesting. I think that for me specifically, like that I can speak on is I'm not like a PFP person. Like I own like a punk, but I'm gonna be into the PFP side. But I think that because they have this deep culture of like anime stuff and like characters, and then they also have this other side that's like in like traditional art, I think both are gonna do very well there. I just think that, like I saw like energy in both. Like if you look at, there's a company called, ZTX, and they were like, they did like a house mint where you could buy a house, and it was like a huge success in America. But they're like a Korean company. And so I don't know, like, I feel like because they stood on the sidelines, they were able to kind of watch and be like, okay, we're not part of that. We didn't get rugged on all this stuff. We saw the pros, we saw the cons, like now let's move forward. And I think that's gonna be very powerful, like the art side and the PFP side.
That's awesome. I want to change topics for one thing, because you and I have talked about this a lot. You know, I'm just kind of curious how you've gone. You know, you were very vocal when royalties were getting removed across the market. Totally different topic, but you've just continued to be successful, continue to find kind of ways to do well in this space since the royalties basically have gone to optional. Since you were just so vocal, and since we're kind of about a year after what really was kind of the movement for royalties to become optional, what's been your kind of experience with that? How are you approaching it from a business perspective differently from maybe how you did a year ago? Just want to get your thoughts, because we had so many chats about that, you know, a year ago.
Yeah. No, it's definitely just an interesting time. I think, my personal stance is like, I would love for there to be royalties. That was like, obviously like a promise in the space. And I think, it's very cool to see the kind of like the art specific platforms still honoring that. If you look at even like Nifty Gateway or Super Rare and Foundation, Rarible, like all these companies that were built on like art mostly, it's cool to see them still honor it. And so I hope they really get their like appreciation for that. For me, my fight wasn't always for me, because as an artist that does one-of-one stuff, my secondary on my one-of-ones is less volume. And I would assume that like I would probably get honored royalties here and there, you know, but I didn't make money beforehand. And so the fight that I saw was just like the greater message of what's to come. And I saw a lot of people come in the space in like 2020, 2021, talking about, wow, this is like a place where we can get royalties. And it's like, I don't know. I favor creatives, and I favor like creatives winning. So that was just always my big fight. And, you know, I do have personal relationships with people at like OpenSea. And so like, yeah, things got heated. And I know you and I have talked about this, like things got heated. And, but then I was able to text those people afterwards and like talk to those people afterwards. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, but I've just been keep going forward. Like I follow like the smarter people in the space that know more about like the devs than, yeah, but it's a very tiring thing, to be honest with you. And so I'm just really tired of talking about that. So this time around, when like OpenSea launched their new thing, I was just like, and they kind of got roasted, for like just taking the 10% and then ripping off Manifold. I was like, I'm going to sit this one out and let the community just like take over on this one. And that's kind of what happened. So, yeah.
Yeah. There can be something nice about just kind of allowing ourselves to not care as much, but yeah, it's still important to, yeah, it's a space where kind of the community does voice what they think. And I think that, yeah, what you did was important for that. Last question for people who can't make it to LA, but want to see this work, who may want to bid on the work there, or who may want to buy some of the work you put out. What can all the people listening who are not in LA do? And then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. It's been awesome to be with you guys, but yeah, they can go to, if they look at any of the tweets that I posted, there's a link to the Sotheby's page that at the bottom of the page you can message where you see like Constance or Michael, like they can like you just ping them and they basically walk you through like as if you would a traditional gallery if you're trying to buy something. You talk to them and we'll release basically the full work the day of the opening. It'll be like list or shown on the site, and then you talk to them and they take care of you.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on. Congratulations again. I think, it's funny to be in the space and see all the, you know, people saying things like NFTs are dead, like the space is dead. And then you see guys like you who are doing solo exhibitions with Sotheby's, being tweeted out by Sotheby's, you know, and having the sales that you've had over the past year. So congrats. It's inspiring, I'm sure, for all of us, but for a lot of other artists as well.
Thank you so much. And I just want to shout you guys out for what you guys have been doing for artists as well. Like I see, and so I love to see it shine and yeah, keep going with what you're doing on that side.
Huge, huge, huge thanks to Thank You X, AKA Ryan, for coming on the show. I mean, what a fantastic artist and story and just leader in our space. So really honored to have him. Great. Next week, I'm away because I'm going to be in Tokyo. On November 7th, Proof is having an event in Tokyo to celebrate a partnership with Sakazuki, a jewel from the Suntory Group. This is going to be a really fun, exciting little ongoing partnership that we're working on with them. Lots of fun details to come on that. But if you happen to be in Tokyo and are a Proof Collective holder, please stop on by. You can RSVP at events.proof.xyz. And we will be out there for that. Japan is such a important area for us to really go in and represent. And we saw that when we went out there here just a couple months ago, just a fantastic turnout. We had, you know, gosh, over 100 people that were Moonbirds and Proof Collective members coming out. And a lot of people brought friends that were just curious about how do I get involved, you know, with Proof, with PFPs, what is Moonbirds all about? And now that we have Mythics, we have a great entry point for a lot of new members. So we really look forward to working with the Suntory Group and with Sakazuki and just a lot of other partners that we're having dialogues with when we go out there. So had to get back to Japan and spend some time out there and activate that market. So that's going to be fun. All right. So I think that is it for today's show. Amanda, Sam, thank you so much. That was awesome. It was a little jerky, few issues.
It's all good. It's all good. It's worth it.
We're the industry.
Hold off the music now.
It's the rare.